Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long-distance and podcast listeners can call toll-free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're tuning in today, thank you for making us a part of your day. As a reminder, the show is replayed every week. Once we record the show, then we replay it on podcasts, wherever you get those, whether that's Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and the like. You can also visit InvestingSimplifiedRadio.com if you'd like to ask a question that way rather than calling into the show. We have had folks that call into the show that don't want to come on live as well, and Josiah will answer the phone and get your question over to Kevin or I, and we'll make sure to answer those. Well, Kevin, it's been a wild week in the market this week.
Huh? It sure has.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, I think we've been calling for having a pullback like we had. You know, we've officially touched bear market territory in a lot of stocks. I think it's 53 of the S&P 500 stocks have officially touched bear market territory. For those folks that don't know, bear market territory just technically means that it is down 20% from its all-time high. So if you've got an all-time high of 20% down, you're going to touch that. You know, we've had a lot of stocks this week that got hit real hard. Apple got hit really hard. That was a lot of people's favorite stock over the last 6 months. But really, just in this week, the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ, the major averages that people follow, are all down over 10% for the week. So just this week of February 24th to the 28th, so 5 days, the market went down over 10%, so double digits. And that's really scary for a lot of people, and questions that I've gotten a lot, and Kevin and I were talking about it before the show started, but it, you know, people think, okay, is now the time to sell? And in my opinion, now's not the time to sell. Now's the time to what?
Buy.
To buy, right? If you have money on the sidelines and you're looking to buy, if I told you that, hey, we're gonna go over to Fred Meyer and you're gonna be able to buy, you know, milk 20% off, right? You not only would buy your milk, but you'd see if you could buy it for all your friends too, right? Milk's a bad analogy because you don't want to buy a lot of milk in your house because then you're gonna have milk that expires. But ideally, if you can buy stuff on sale 20% off, that's a really great time to buy, in my opinion, right? And if, especially for folks, if you're still working, if you are plugging money into your 401k, into your simple IRA, into your Roth 401k or your Roth plan, in my opinion, now's a great time for you to buy. You should be excited, actually, that the market has taken the kind of dip that it did, because now you're buying on sale. You're plugging money in every month or every couple of weeks with each paycheck. It actually can be really, really good. Now, that being said, if you're 2, 3, 4, 5 years away from retirement, it can be really scary, too, because what if you're even less than a couple years away from retirement? If your target retirement was maybe next month, maybe you were planning on stepping away next month, it could be pretty scary if you were overextended into stocks in your portfolio, which, if you haven't had a review, now's a really good time to get a checkup. Chuck used to always call it the financial checkup, right? Because he liked to call himself the financial doctor, despite right. The fact that he had no doctorate. We always had to put that out there because the state didn't like that. But he called himself the financial doctor because the idea was you want to make sure that you're getting a checkup. But, you know, what's the number one depreciating asset that everybody owns?
Car.
Yeah, exactly. And how often you get? Every 6 months, right? Like clockwork. People go, oh my God, the little sticker on my car says, I got to go in. I'm 100 miles past when it says to go in. I got to get in there. So everybody takes an asset that depreciates, what is it? What do they say? 30% as soon as you drive it off the lot, it's right. Worth 30% less. And you're taking the worst performing asset in your portfolio in to get a check every 6 months. why don't you take the, you know, the most necessary item or asset that you have, couldn't find the word, the most necessary asset that you have, which is your retirement funds, the money that you've saved so that you can retire, your invested dollars, and have a checkup. You can call our office at 503-253-3000. We're happy to sit down with you. We'll give you that complimentary checkup. We'll go over where your risk profile is, how you're actually invested. What are the fees that you're paying? A lot of people don't know what kind of fees they're paying and how that could drag their portfolio down. And we'll talk about where you are right now. We'll give you that picture of where you are right now. And we'll talk about your dreams, your goals, your hopes for retirement planning. For everybody's got a financial plan, they say, right? Anybody can call themselves a financial planner. Basically, you can just open, you could put a, what do they call that? Hang a shingle outside your business window and say, I'm a financial planner. And maybe they are licensed, maybe they're not. But it behooves you to give us a call. It's complimentary, no obligation to sit down with a fiduciary, someone who's putting your interests above their own, and just go over where you're at. And if you're doing great, if everything's on track, I'm going to tell you that. If part of your plan is that you want to buy a condo in the Taj Mahal and you don't have the assets to do that, I'm going to have that conversation too. Right? Because we do have that conversation with folks about, hey, maybe we need to adjust our goals, because there's a difference between, you know, wants, wishes, and needs, right? There's a difference between what we need in retirement and what we want and what we wish for. So give us a call. We're happy to go over that. Because the other thing, Kevin, and I heard this the other day, I was talking to a colleague of mine, and he had an experience, and this is back in 2008, which a lot of people are getting flashbacks from because of how fast this market has moved downward. But he had an experience where a client of his came to him and explained, you know, she's been working with him for a few years now, but in 2008, she had her money in a retirement date 2009 fund. So a target date retirement fund, which those a lot of times in a 401k, a target date fund does really well. It's diversified. It gets you, it automatically rebalances for you. It kind of takes some of the onus off of the investor, off of the individual to manage that. But the thing is, if you thought, okay, my target retirement date is 2009, it's 2008, I'm 1 year away, it should be pretty conservative, right? She lost over 30% in that fund in 2008. In a target date fund, right? Which is kind of scary. That's terrifying. So it behooves you to sit down and see where your actual risk allocation is. Because if you don't have a strategy for having sustainable retirement dollars, if you don't have a strategy for managing risk when stuff like this last week happens, and it's right before you're going to retire, it might really hurt. People don't know. You know this because it's, you know, we deal with math every day. But if you lose 20% in your portfolio, it takes 25% return to get back to even. If you lose 50% in your portfolio, it takes how much? 100%. You have to have a 100% return to get back to even. So if you are not prepared for the volatility that is coming, we're in an election year. There's a coronavirus out there. People are scared. We were talking about the other aspect is the market was overpriced. So you add all those things together, you throw them into a bucket, and what you get is volatility. You get fluctuation in your assets and in your market. And if you are a person who can't handle that, it behooves you to sit down with a fiduciary advisor and go over where you're actually at and see what that means. What we do is we also run a risk report, Kevin, and we show people, hey, if 2008 happens again, this is what you're likely to experience based on where you're invested right now. And sometimes people say, that's okay, I get it. Met with a client yesterday who's deciding he's going to continue work. He was thinking about retiring this year, but he's still enjoying himself. And he has plenty of money. He could retire now. But he's thinking, you know, he likes to have his money in his 401k invested in the market, and it's pretty aggressively invested considering he's, you know, approaching retirement. But he likes to do that. He likes to get the ups. And he says, you know, doesn't matter. Just got to let it wash itself out. Market's going to bounce back. And eventually, historically, it has. So if you can handle that roller coaster, if you're a Matterhorn rider, it doesn't behoove you to get yourself into a Mr. Toad's Wild Ride portfolio. If you can ride that big roller coaster and you understand that you're going to stay invested over the long term, you and Warren Buffett will be fine in the long term, right? You're buying quality stuff and you're holding on to it. If, however, you're one of those people that's going to get nervous when the market does what it's been doing over the last week, when the headlines go, when we have an election year, which I think it's only going to get worse as we approach the election, particularly considering who it appears that the Democrats are going to nominate, that may send shockwaves through the market, because the Democratic nominee appears to be very, I don't want to call it anti-business. You know, I don't want to cast aspersions on anybody, but it appears that he's got a lot of proposals that are going to cost big business a lot of money. And where does that trickle down to us, you and I, because I'm not big businesses in the market.
Yeah. You know, 2008 was a pretty novel event in that that meltdown was directly related to literally billions of dollars of, you know, bad loans that directly right. It was a financial event. You know, a lot of the stuff going on right now is going to affect the economy indirectly for a time, right. You know, the coronavirus, that type of a thing. So it just doesn't really feel like 2008.
Yeah, not to me either. And we don't know. Yeah. I mean, we're not, yeah. You know, we're not Nostradamus, right? Yeah. But yeah, to me, when I heard someone mention it feels more like the dot-com bubble sort of situation. But really what I heard that I think speaks to me the most, an economist that I was reading yesterday, and what he said was it feels a lot like 1987. So if you remember Black Monday in 1987, I was only three, but you know, full disclosure, right? But you know, 1987, well, the market lost 25% one day. Biggest one-day loss ever, right? That's when because of that, they inputted a lot of checks and balances against that, such as closing the New York Stock Exchange if the market moves too much in a day,
right,
for an hour, for 2 hours, for the day, just to keep that panic selling from happening again. But after that giant market move, the market actually rocketed up. And then it proceeded to go into the 90s, where we had one of the best run, you know, bull run markets in history. So,
well, Bo, I was 12 back in 87, so let me tell you all about it. I do remember it, but no.
You know, you had all your money invested in 87. And actually, I think it just rolled on the ticker, so I misspoke. I believe it was 22.6%. I thought it was near 25, but still above 20% in a day is crazy. In the Dow is crazy. It just, you know, interesting enough, just rolled up on the ticker up there. Nice. But the idea is this is an opportunity. We were talking about it's an opportunity to buy, to rotate out of those safe assets if you have cash assets sitting on the sideline. Now, if you're one of those people who is going to be needing to get all of the upside, I think you can buy the open on Monday. I think you can start going and say, hey, I'm going to buy the open. Because I think we talked about it a little bit before the show started. I think there's a little bit more to watch out. My personal opinion is that the market's got a little bit more downward push before it bounces fully. But if you're afraid of missing out on any upside, then yeah, buy Monday. Now, if you're thinking you want to be a little bit more tactical about it, what I've been suggesting for a lot of folks that have cash sitting on the sideline, for folks that have brought their money over to us that we haven't put to work in the market yet for their risk assets, for their risk portfolios, we're going to dollar cost average. And what that means is you're going to put a little bit in every period over a period of time. And whether that's weeks or months or years, it ostensibly what you're doing in your 401k is dollar cost averaging, because every 2 weeks you put money in. And the reason that that makes sense is because the market's going to go up and down over that time period, but you're not going to have all your eggs in case the market goes down a little bit further. And if it does, you've got some eggs in, not missing out on the upside. And then when it goes down further, we put more in and buy more. And it's just a way to keep a strategy that's rules-based, that you're not going to regret, you're not going to second-guess yourself, you're not going to see the movement of the market. So if you're going to dollar-cost average, my suggestion, in my opinion, you say, okay, I'm going to put 25% of my cash that's sitting to work in over the next 4 weeks, once a week on Monday or once a week on Tuesday. You pick a day and you stick to it, because otherwise you're going to second guess yourself, right? And if you have a long time horizon, if you're like us where we have a long time till we're going to need the money, volatility is actually good. It means that you can buy on the lows, right? You can buy the dips. So I think that's a good place to take a break here. If you have a question, give us a call, 503-222-9700. Or 1-800-344-5836. We'd love to hear from you. Kevin and I got some interesting things to talk about in the tax world. We'll talk a little bit more about the coronavirus, how we think that that's going to affect the market, and different things to look out for. But we'd love to hear from you about your question that's been keeping you up at night. So 503-222-9700. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, It can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. Thank you for tuning in today and listening. Thanks for your calls. We do appreciate when folks call in with questions that have been keeping them up at night. I can guarantee you, if it's something that's been bogging you or something that you've been wondering about, another listener out there is also wondering that and is just too afraid to call. So pick up the phone, give us a shout, 503-222-9700. Or 1-800-344-5836. So now I want to talk a little bit about the coronavirus and a little bit about, especially since, I don't know, Kevin, if you saw the news that yesterday that we have our first confirmed case here in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's actually, you know, it's a public school worker in Lake Oswego that works for the school district. And he or she, they haven't released any sort of information, is out at Kaiser Westside, I believe, in Hillsborough, being taken care of and, you know, looks good. The big thing that I tell, and this is not necessarily investing related, it's health related. We talked about this a little bit. The coronavirus, in case folks don't know, and I think this is interesting cocktail party knowledge, right? The interesting knowledge is that it's called a coronavirus, which, by the way, influenza, the normal flu, is also a coronavirus. But it's called a coronavirus because when you look at the virus cells under a microscope, it has a ring. They have little offshoots that form a ring that look like a corona, like around the sun. Right. So when you look at it, it looks kind of like a little miniature sun. So that's why it's called a coronavirus. But it's like the flu. And what did we say? I think there have been more flu deaths in the United States this year than there have been just in the United States. And there have been total deaths from the coronavirus, I think, across the world. Now, no human life, you know, lost is, not one human life is too many, mm-hmm, in terms of losing it to a virus. But I only say that for perspective. When you're thinking about, there's a lot of, you know, travel bans that are talking, they're, you know, travel is getting affected, all these other things. If you're taking care of yourself, you're washing your hands, you're not touching your face, you're not, you know, letting people sneeze in your open mouth, right? You're probably unlikely to contract the virus. That being said, keep yourself safe out there. But how it's going to affect the market, if it becomes a global pandemic, which it might, it's going to affect the market in negative ways. But if you look back historically, there have been virus outbreaks. There have been coronavirus outbreaks such as SARS, you know, back in the early 2000s. MERS, so that's South Asian Respiratory Syndrome or Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, which are both coronaviruses and are far more deadly than this particular novel coronavirus or COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
They also had the Ebola scare just a couple years ago, right? Ebola, which, again, was far more deadly than this. And when you're looking at, you know, back over time, if you're looking at the different things that could cause the market to go down, there's been reasons to sell over time. The Ebola virus, there are headlines that come up, and I've just got a chart here that you can Google. I'll get you but you've got, you know, over the last, since, you know, March of 2009, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, we talk about the flash crash in 2015, right? Or 2011, rather. We talk about when the S&P downgraded the U.S. debt. They said, hey, U.S. is no longer
AAA
rated, yep. Right? We're downgrading the debt. If we have, you know, the Ebola virus, we got the fiscal cliff. Do you remember the fiscal cliff a few years ago where everyone said that's going to run the government? Because the fiscal cliff, if people don't remember, was when the government couldn't agree on a spending bill and we're going off the fiscal cliff and the government's going to shut down, right? We've got, you know, that we have the Dow, that when the Dow fell, I think that was in September of 15, the Dow did its first time that it fell 1,000 points. People are like, 1,000 points? It did it five times this last week, right? We've got the repo market, you know, the people were asking about it this last year. We've got government shutdown. We've got the bombing of the Iranian, you know, the Iranian plane that blew up here a couple months ago, and everyone thought, oh my God, that's a reason to sell. And if you sold on any of those times since 2009, when the market turned around, you missed out on like 400% growth in your portfolio. So if you're set up for the long term, if you have a portfolio that's built around expectations of what your realistic expectations of drawdown is, realistic expectations of how much you can handle in that volatility, it behooves you, in my opinion, not to just go sell right now, especially now, right? So the market's down, so don't sell now. Buy more now. That being said, if you can't handle the fluctuations, get yourself to a position where you can handle it, right? So if you, when you hear these headlines about things and reasons to sell, there are almost always reasons to sell. There's viruses, there's global pandemic fears, there's various and sundry things, the election, all those things are going to cause volatility. But if you're smart and if you're positioned well, then you're going to do well over the long term, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. You know, the another one that comes to mind back on your first topic on all these influenzas. I know our listeners probably know more about it than I do, but the 1917 flu was...
Spanish flu, right?
Yeah, if you get a chance to, you know, learn a little bit about that. I know OPB, I think, had an American experience on it. You know, you don't always learn these things in school, but boy, if you spend a little time, some of those are some pretty interesting events. And I know it's probably pre-stock market times, at least of what the stock market is nowadays.
Right.
But... some pretty significant events. And I know, you know, if you learn about some of those things stick in your mind and probably, you know, creates a lot of the caution that we have nowadays, which is not a bad thing. You know, we have advanced scientifically too a lot.
That was before, you know, if you're thinking about the Spanish flu in 17, you know, that was before global travel and before the interconnectedness of the global economy, which is what a lot of people are saying. Oh, well, you know, China is so intrinsic to the global economy, and that's absolutely true. They are, you know, a lot of where clothing manufacturers get a lot of their supplies from in terms of the textiles market there, where Apple and other tech companies get a lot of their rare earth materials are from there, right?
Apparently, most of our pharmaceuticals are manufactured in the Far East.
So. Yeah, that would make sense. But if you think about there, you know, I hesitate to say that, you know, it's hard to trust the numbers that are coming out of China a lot of times, you know, right? But they have shown, it appears that the virus is slowing there, right? So it's expanding elsewhere, but in China they've gotten, you know, kind of a slow on it. Some epidemiologists that I've heard when they've talked about it have said, you know, it's inevitable that it's going to start spreading, that it's going to spread here just because it's, if it wasn't contained, it's not contained, right? Because it's like the flu. But that what I heard the other day, and, you know, take it with a grain of salt because it's one person's opinion, although they're a lot smarter, I think, than I, especially in terms of, you know, epidemiology, right, in terms of infectious disease. But they said, basically, we're going to now have, there's going to be, you know, it's going to be a new flu season, right? There's going to be the influenza, you know, cold and flu season. There's going to be COVID-19. Like, it's just going to be a thing because it's in the, for lack of a better word, it's in the diaspora, right? It's out there. Mm-hmm. We have it. And now, you know, it's one of those... like the flu, that you can get a vaccine against a lot of strains of it, but it's constantly evolving as a virus. So your body can build up antibodies to one kind of it, but then gets it later, right? So, you know, those are things, like we said, just if you protect yourself out there, folks, make sure you're washing your hands. That's the biggest thing I can tell you as a parent of three small children, and I'm constantly telling them, hey, you've got, you know, why did you wash your hands? Like, go actually, and they, you know, they do it for a second. But, you know, taking care of yourself with hand washing and with not like touching your face and touching other people's face, make sure you don't touch your eyes or your nose, your mouth with dirty hands. Those sort of things are what it's going to keep you from getting something like COVID-19, just like it keeps you from getting the flu, right? And the funny thing is the masks that everyone buys, you know, the masks that you wear, the surgical mm-hmm. masks, from what I understand, those are not to prevent you from getting something from me. Those are to prevent you from sending something to me. So okay. The mask, that's the reason that they're called surgical masks, right? Because when the surgeon's got you on a table.
Keeps their germs to themselves.
It keeps their germs to themselves, right. But it doesn't protect your eyes, you know, right? So if somebody sneezed and you've got that mask, your eyes are right there. Covers your nose and mouth. But the idea is to keep your particles from getting out there. And from what I understand, although this virus is very contagious, like the flu, it's not like it's contagious from you and I necessarily right here, right? We're standing, you have to be standing this close, and you have to give it to me. Sneeze or cough or, but the way that it does happen that a lot of people don't think about is if I sneeze or cough on my hand, and then I'm touching the mouse here on the computer, and then you come over and touch the mouse, and then touch your face.
Mm-hmm.
That's how, you know, but if you're practicing good hygiene, if you're washing your hands, if you're not touching your nose and eyes, then from what I understand, that means you should not be exposed to it, right? Now, what it means for the global slowdown in terms of the market, you mentioned 2008 last segment in terms of 2008 was a response to what was happening in real time, right? It's these credit default swaps. And if you haven't seen The Big Short, I really highly recommend people watch that movie. Big Short is it does a great job of breaking down how the financial crisis happened and how people profited off of it, but how these bad loans were built, then packaged, then chopped up, and then resold, and then resold again, right? And so these people, it was a reaction to, in real time, these market instruments, and they're called derivatives, you know, these market derivatives that were underregulated, that were not watched, and in real time, the market was reacting to it. This reaction that the market has had over the last week, I believe, is more a reaction to what could happen, right? It's forward-looking, looking on what could happen in the election, what could happen with the coronavirus, what could happen, you know, across supply chains. You know, in China, Starbucks shuttered all its stores, right, when the coronavirus, but I was reading yesterday, they've opened most of them again. A lot of the investment in China, the American companies that have invested in China are reopening operations, but a lot of times you're behind, right? The container ships haven't been shipping out. You're behind on supply. If you're going on Amazon trying to find some stuff, very likely it won't be there, right? Because they're being used in China. But from my understanding, they are reopening those sort of things. And I think it's a good lesson for those companies that have done so much business there because of the cheap labor, because of the availability of cheap stuff over there in China. But it may be a lesson that, hey, let's not be so dependent on them for your supply chain. Mm-hmm. Right? I think it could be a positive. Again, no loss of human life is positive. But if they can find a silver lining in it, it could be that we can reduce some of the supply chain reliance on China, right? Reduce some of that. The other thing to think about is this market continues to press downward. Again, I think the floor is somewhere around 24,000 in the Dow. That's my opinion. But as the market continues to press downward, if you have individual stock positions inside your IRA, and you've been thinking about doing a Roth conversion, now could be a really good time to convert, right? So if your Apple stock has lost, 35%, might be a good time now to think about, because you like Apple stock, you want to hold on to it, you don't want to get rid of it, but you might think about converting it to Roth now because it's worth 25% less than what it was worth 2 months ago. Convert it over to your Roth now and let it bounce back in a tax-free, spectrum. Or conversely, if you're thinking about doing that with, just with your IRA in general, it's not necessarily better to convert it when it's down, but it is nice because it's smaller amounts. But holding those individual stock positions now is a really good time because they're down. Then you get to grow them back when they're
tax-free,
right? Then that makes your CPA happy. Then they're saying, hey, they don't have to cost you a lot in taxes. It's just a thought, something to think, to put out there. It's the silver lining with these sort of pullbacks in the market. One of them is that it's a buying opportunity. Stuff's on sale. The other is it may be a good time to do a conversion. It may be a good time to take your RMD if you're thinking about taking that required minimum in individual stocks, right? Because now you can take more shares out for the same amount of, same amount of money and get them out and hold on to them. So now they're tax efficient. As they grow, we get capital gains treatment rather than ordinary income as they come out of your retirement plan. So that's kind of counterintuitive, or what I want to say, anti what Chuck always preaches about never holding individual stocks in IRAs. But I know a lot of people do, and a lot of people like to have those individual stocks, right? If you've got ExxonMobil, goodness, now's a good time. That one's been crushed. The oil sector, the energy sector has just been crushed, which, might mean it's a good time to buy in it. I don't know. I don't do individual stocks, right? We've talked about that. I'm just not smart enough, just not savvy enough to follow all of them. So if you want to have a review of that, if you'd like to see what it looks like to do a Roth conversion, what it would look like for your situation, for leaving money to your kids, leaving money to your heirs, leaving money to your charity, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. We have a new West Side office just opened up in Beaverton off of Cornell Road. So we'd love to see you there if you're out on the west side of town. And also meet folks in Tigard or in Gateway. They call it Gateway, the Mall 205 area, right? I've learned it's called Gateway. So all over Portland and greater Portland and Vancouver, we're happy to meet with you guys. Give our office a call or visit our website at pfgwm.com. You can also drop me an email, bo@pfgwm.com. So we're going to take a break here. And when we come back, Kevin's got a tax investigator segment full of tricks that people tried to pull over. That's what I'd like you to call it, something about, you know, trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the IRS. So some things, interesting things that people tried to write off, and particularly some things where some interesting rulings where you wouldn't have thought this is taxable or this is taxed. Tax deductible. So stay tuned with Tax Investigator with Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you are reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Colson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers. Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and we do want your calls, 503-222-9700 or 800-344-5836. And we will take our first caller. Kathy, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I have a question about I'm preparing my taxes, and the program I'm using says on the feds says that I have a refund from 2018 taxes that was refunded to me. I didn't get a 1099-G for it because I made estimated taxes in 2018, and it turns out I owed zero state tax. So they refunded to me the total amount of that I had paid in estimated.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to claim that as income on the feds for 2019?
Ah, very good question. You're talking about Oregon tax.
Yes,
Oregon is what Oregon, you got refunded.
Oregon estimated tax that I paid that I didn't need to.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
And did you do you know if you itemized deductions on your federal return in 2018? Did you use Schedule
A?
You did not. Okay, so it's not taxable to you then. If you didn't, if you did not itemize, no tax refunds are taxable.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Yes, very good. Good question. That's she's getting into the meat of the matter, and
nitty gritty. We're saving people money left and right. Look at you.
That's exactly right. And I actually, uniquely enough, state of Oregon is usually really on top of their 1099-Gs that they send out for state tax refunds. But I did have one this year that didn't make sense, and so we were able to contact the state of Oregon, and it was incorrect. So it does happen on occasion, but it was a unique circumstance.
Sure, sure. Well, yeah, and so, and should people mostly be paying attention to those 1099-Gs when it's talking about taxability, or even if they don't get it, it's just about a refund?
Most likely you're going to get the 1099-G no matter what, and you have to determine if it's taxable or not based on whether you took a deduction on it in the prior year.
Okay, that makes sense. But so rule of thumb is if you didn't itemize, then your refund is not taxable.
That's
if
right.
If you itemized, then it is.
That's right. If you didn't deduct it, you don't have a recap.
Oh, right, right. Yep. Yeah. If you didn't deduct your state tax paid. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it looks like Henry has a question about using money from your IRA. Hello, Henry.
Good morning. Tax question concerning the use of IRA funds for the automatic deduction to charity.
Yeah, the qualified charitable distribution?
Yes.
Sure.
I was told that that there are two ways you can ask your mutual fund company for a form and it's a nightmare, it's several pages. Or you could ask them just to cut some checks, and then they send them to you. You can photocopy them and then send them to the charity. Well, someone, the accountant who I heard speaking, said that better use the form and not the check part, because there have been no tax court cases supporting the use of mutual fund company checks. Do you have any perspective on that, please?
I'd say that's the safe route. The proper method is to have the funds go direct. It's always best to have it go directly, you know, trustee to trustee or trustee to charity, and not have the funds actually in our physical sweaty little hands. Yes. And so, you know, my general thought is it would probably be fine, but why be probable? You know, go the main route if you can, and not have the actual funds. But of course, you know, the checks are made out to the charity and you're just forwarding them on. I doubt that's going to be a big issue, but why have any gray area?
Yeah. Well, Henry, I think a lot of the times that people have issues with when the check is sent, you know, a lot of mutual fund companies, brokerage companies, different things where you've housed your money, when the funds are being sent to somebody other than you, that's where the form comes in, right? And it's a pain. Sometimes you have to get a signature guarantee from, you know, a bank or a credit union. Sometimes you have to get it notarized, all the different steps that they throw those
gold
hoops in there.
Medallion signature.
Yeah, the medallion. Yep, the signature guarantee. Yeah, yeah. So if folks are listening, like Henry, you've got to get a signature guarantee or medallion. If you go to your bank or your credit union where you bank, they will do it for you, but you have to have your assets there. Your broker dealer may be able to do it too if you work with a broker dealer. As an RIA, independent RIA, we don't. We can notarize things, but we can't do a signature guarantee. But it's offered by broker dealers and banks and credit unions. But like Henry said, it can be a pain, right?
That form is a nightmare.
Right, right. Yeah, they don't make it easy, which is funny because you're trying to give your, well, not funny, haha, but you're trying to give your money to charity. They want, trying to keep it out of your sweaty hands.
Okay. Point well taken. Thank you.
You betcha. You betcha, Henry. Thanks for the question. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Like the, you mentioned trustee to trustee transfer. So if you're doing a rollover from your 401k, if you're moving money from an IRA to another IRA, all, and that's a specific time because you're only allowed one indirect rollover, but
that's
even
right.
Per year, but even if you're talking about that, just doing the one, it's always better to have it just go trustee to trustee.
Yeah.
Right? It just, it, like you said, it makes it cleaner. Why have a probability? Why have a worry?
Yeah.
About what might happen.
There's this, you know, concept of, you know, form over substance or substance over form, whichever way you want to look at it.
Sure.
And usually the IRS is going to take the position that, you know, benefits them. And sometimes you do things exactly right, but if the underlying nature is tax avoidance, they can still get you. Or you can do something a certain way, and they're going to say, no, you know, the actual form is what you're doing is this. And so, you know, it can work both ways. So really, it's best to follow the proper channels best you can, and that tends to
keep the IRS's fingers out of it, right?
That way you're not a headline or a footnote in IRS reference material of so-and-so versus the United States versus so-and-so. So that you never want that.
Yeah, and then you end up on, you know,
radio
on an investigator segment trying to pull one over on the IRS.
That's
which,
right.
You know, that's just for those of you who are not in the business. That's called a professional segue that I just did.
Well done. Very well done. So I do have to say I'm taken directly off of a great article from Kiplinger. They put together about 15 different tax breaks that people tried to take advantage of, or they viewed a situation a certain way, and they ended up in tax court and, for the most part, ended up losing.
Whoops. Yeah, well, that's, the IRS is not undefeated, you know, it's not Father Time, you know, but they have a pretty darn good record, I would say. They're more like the Patriots, right? They win most of the time.
That's right. I think usually when they end up in tax court, they're usually about 85-90%.
Wow.
Because they've got their They know where they're angling. And frankly, the times that they do lose, they're usually trying to set a precedent on something that they are, you know, you don't want to be one of their guinea pig cases where they need a ruling so that they can push it further down the line to get clarification to get a rule set up how they want. So you could just be a stepping stone, and that's not good either.
No.
So here's a case where and they're all pretty unusual cases. I don't know if I would take most of these positions, but here's somebody that had a home business, and they operated out of their home, and they were getting so much calling from their clients that they went and rented a hotel for a couple nights to get a good night's sleep and to get away from their home. Now, I'd say at this point, you need to go and lease an office somewhere.
Right.
And it's just worth it. But they tried to take that as a business expense, and that ended up being a no.
So, yeah, it's a no. So you can't, well, dang it, I can't get away, try to get away from my, you know, my kids bugging at me and write it off. Okay. Yep. Learning something new every day.
Yep. Here's a taxpayer that paid it was investigating his father's death to find out whether whether it was murder or suicide, and spent a huge amount of money investigating with private investigators, and took a deduction on that because he felt it would end up potentially being a good movie or a story or a book or something along those lines. But that's kind of putting the cart before the horse without actually having that income and contract.
Right.
The answer was no.
Was no. Well, yeah, in that situation, right, you'd think he could just keep track of it. That feels to me like, you know, as a tax layman, but that feels to me like the gambling, right, where it's, you know, I bought lottery tickets, but you don't get to write it off till you win. So similarly, he can write all that stuff off of the income from the movie or the book, right, because that was research, but not till you actually have the income.
Well said. Well said. That's spot on. In fact, they called it a hobby.
Oh, sure. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. They called it a hobby. So now here's one that'll affect you.
Uh-oh.
Kids in beauty pageants.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Not my kids.
Oh, okay. Well, so here, and this is interesting because you can see a number of scenarios that this could, you know, it doesn't have to be beauty pageants, but kids making a little bit of income. And, you know, we're talking a 8-year-old.
Sure.
And, you know, they don't have bank accounts and business expenses that type of stuff. So, you know, the kid made a couple $1,000s each year and the parents put it into the, you know, a college savings fund. But parents clearly had business expenses, you know, driving to and from the shows and that type of a thing. And interestingly, the IRS really segregated stuff that, you know, the parents took a write-off for all those expenses. And they reported the kid's income on their own return, and it's no, this is the kid's income, and they have no expenses because you paid for them.
Right.
So the IRS kind of played hardball on that couple $1,000s. I guess the parents could have gifted the money to the kid to spend, but they didn't.
They didn't. Too late now.
Yep.
Oh, man. Well, they're good to know. So, no, I'm just going to have to explain to my daughter that we're not driving anywhere for any sort of pageants because I can't write it off.
No more T-ball practice.
No more T-ball practice.
That's right. Well, let's go to our next break, we can come back with a few more of these if we don't get any more phone calls. But we do want your calls. Those are great questions we had earlier. 503-222-9700 or 800-344-5836. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
This is Kevin Stege with Baker & Coulson. You're listening to Investing Simplified, and we will continue on here with our attempts at creative tax planning, if you will, were not successful.
Sure.
So here's a this is a interesting one, and I think this would happen fairly often. A husband and wife have separate businesses, small businesses or side businesses. One of them turned a profit, and the other was turning a loss.
Yeah, yeah.
And they tried to use the expenses of the one to offset the gain from the other. You know, so you want the one with the profit has to pay self-employment tax,
right,
and so on and so forth. But they are two very different endeavors, and you have to report those separately. And if one has a profit, it has its own self-employment tax and income tax on that. And the one with the loss, obviously the loss can help net overall offset the income tax, but not the self-employment tax side.
Right.
So they, you know, unless you're going to, you know, have some advanced tax planning and, you know, involve, you know, put everything into one entity and combine it all.
Right.
You do have to keep those separate. And if one has a gain, it's got to pay the tax.
That makes sense. So could they have maybe avoided that hypothetically if they had like an umbrella, you know, corporation that owned both of them? Like if they made it two subsidiary corporations, they could conceivably.
Or just one. And you know, because a separate entity, an LLC or a corporation, can usually in the documents of formation, it says this corporation is allowed to do any business that is legally able to be done. And so, you know, you can have a corporation that is a butcher shop and also, you know, sells widgets. So, and combine it all into one in profit and loss. So,
I like it.
Yeah. So now this is creative. I hadn't thought of this one before, and I don't know if I would have thought of it because I don't know how good of a strategy it is. But this is a struggling business that needed some cash flow, and they needed a loan from a bank. But because they were a struggling business, they weren't going to get the loan.
That's how that kind of
works.
Usually,
And so bank is a little worried about getting paid back.
Sure.
So they had an agreement, basically, not agreement with the bank, but basically what they did is they just overdraft their checking account. And then when their cash flow came back in, they paid the overdraft back.
Huh.
And this strategy generated about $30,000 worth of bank charges per year. So, you know, if you're talking $1 million loans, $1 million overdrafts, that's not too bad. But I doubt we're talking $1 million. We're probably talking, $5,000-$10,000 per overdraft something. So this is pretty significant. And the IRS said, no, you don't get to deduct that. And the reason being, even though it was related to business, it wasn't reasonable. Your business expenses to be deductible have to be ordinary, necessary, and reasonable. All three of those things. And so this is where, you know, substance over form. It's a business expense, but you do have to follow the law here on this one. So,
well, I think that, you know, a lot of times it just comes down, like you said, substance over form. Are you trying to pull one over on the IRS? Are you trying, you know, they're generally speaking, they're, you know, as long as people, in my experience at least, and I, you know, you could speak to yours with the IRS, but they're not unreasonable, you know, in situations where people can't find their cost basis. You know, they inherited stock 30 years ago and don't know their cost basis, and you go back and do your research and do your best to get an amount and an estimated amount. My experience, the IRS doesn't come down on you. They may say, oh, well, we think it's a little bit more. But if you're going to go say, well, we have no, you know, our cost base, you know, if you're trying to escape thousands of dollars worth of tax, if you're just trying to do your best and paying a reasonable amount and being, you know, generally speaking, they're going to give you some leeway. It's when you're trying to unreasonably pull over, like you said, $30,000 in overdraft fees is a lot.
It's I find it, you know, creative, and I would have probably taken the deduction too. It's just probably not a smart business decision to have that type of fees related to that type of borrowing. You can't sustain that. So
sure.
Yeah. So we'll do two more, and we'll end on these two.
Like
and they're both on the more sordid side of life, if you will.
Sorry.
This is one where the one spouse killed the other spouse.
Oh, no.
And then claimed, and that spouse was the primary, spouse number one was the primary beneficiary on the 401k.
Okay,
and according to state law, she was not entitled to gains from her crime.
Right.
And so she had to forfeit the 401k. The son got it in the court case because he was the next in line as the secondary beneficiary. And the court case basically came down to the son saying, no, my mom owed the income tax on this. I get the money, but I don't owe the income tax. And that just didn't stand up. You got the money, you pay the tax.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Although I get it, you know, he's a little, I could understand his feeling, why he would feel that way. I mean, mom, you know.
Killed dad.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, moving on from that one. we got one more killing here. And and this is related to a tax prep firm, too.
Oh, goodness.
So
so you're not going to be sleeping well tonight, is what you're saying.
I always sleep good. Okay, so this is, let's see. The accountant had been sent to jail for killing her husband, and the person who took over their office was incompetent, according to the taxpayers, and they filed their tax returns late, and they had late filing penalties.
Sure.
And so the taxpayers tried to blame the new accountant that took over the business and said, hey, they were incompetent. And the tax court said, no, you as the taxpayer are responsible for your taxes.
Right.
So that's how it happens.
Well, I think that you know, the personal responsibility. Yeah, you want to make sure that you're working with a professional that's going to be helpful in getting all your stuff filed. But it's still your responsibility, right? It's sort of like I mentioned the cost basis issue before, because a lot of times people have trouble tracking their cost basis. Another thing that comes up in terms of you keeping track of yourself, like you're still responsible even if you're working with a firm. So, it's my understanding that, you know, your custodian, whether that's Schwab or TD Ameritrade or Edward Jones, they provide the cost basis and they track it for you as a service. They track what your RMD is going to be as a service. But in my understanding, they are not required to. If they have the numbers and they report it to the IRS, they are not required to make sure you take your RMD. Now, if you're not working with an advisor who does their best to make sure you take it, then you need a new advisor. But they're not required to. It's not their responsibility. It's not your CPA's responsibility. It's yours. Right. Now, we should, as a matter of when we're saying we look out for our clients and providing the proper customer service, they should be providing that stuff. But tracking your cost basis, tracking your RMDs, tracking your Roth contributions, right? If you're looking at, hey, what my contributions are over time, this came up. I met with, you know, with a young gal yesterday who's looking to get a Roth started and asking questions about how to get it started. And you know, we went over the fact that all your contributions to a Roth can be withdrawn at any point. No taxes, no penalties, your contributions. And I explained to her, well, if you've put in 10 and now it's worth 30 because you've done a really good job investing, maybe she's going to buy on Monday and it's going to go straight up, right? That first 10, she can pull out for whatever reason. And she's only, you know, just about to turn 30. So she, you know, she's got plenty of time that, you know, over that she before 59 and a half, but all the growth, she is going to have taxes and penalties. And she said, well, who tracks that? How do I keep track of that? And I said, well, you do. And she's like, well, do people just do it on a spreadsheet? And I said, yeah, sometimes people do it on a spreadsheet. And I mean, ideally, you're not going to pull the money out from your Roth, but it's another personal responsibility situation where you have personal responsibility for those, even if you're working with professionals. Now, that's not saying that we don't, as professionals, have a responsibility, you know, from a standpoint of a customer service to help, but
we track that for all of
our clients.
That's why we have a $15,000 tax prep software that we pay every year.
Oh, right, right. Well, yes. The tax prep, that we pay the time for the tax prep.
But a new client comes to us, they say, well, you know, why is, you know, this is a little more than TurboTax. It's like, well, we actually ask for all of your history. We put all of that together.
Right.
We do the research. What's your basis in your real estate? What's your basis in your Roth? So on and so forth.
So we had just another reason to work with a tax prep firm like Baker & Coulson, right?
That's
so
right.
That way you can keep track of all that basis stuff, because that's, speaking from a financial advisor perspective, that's really hard when folks come and they bring their funds over. And if we're trying to make tactical decisions, if we're trying to make strategic moves, if you don't know your cost basis, it's a pain to track, and it can cost a lot more to go back and track it than just having it set up to track with you. So if they want to get a hold of you, how do they get in touch, Kevin?
We're at baker-colson.com, and our phone number is 503-666-5569.
And if you'd like to come down and sit down with me or my team, get that complimentary review. Again, the first hour is on us. There's never a cost to sit down and ask questions. There are no stupid questions when it comes to your money, to your taxes, to your estate planning, anything like that. Give us a call, 503-253-3000, or visit www.pfgwm.com. Thank you so much. Be safe out there. God bless you all.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000. You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.